there's a method in the way that I'm handing these lessons out. We made the quiz for the first lesson available last week, and we encourage you to answer that quiz. They're just short quizzes, won't take you 5 or 10 minutes, if that. And the idea is to, first of all, test our memory of the things maybe we've studied in the past, to provide a way to see that there's practical application to what we're studying, and hopefully to encourage us to realize that this study is valuable, even if you've been through it before, to refresh our memories and to better equip us when we meet these kind of questions to be prepared to deal with them. The outline that you've been given is the outline for today's lesson. That's the way we'll do, the Lord willing, throughout the course. And so then you've also been given today a quiz for the second lesson. So we encourage you to do that quiz just like you did the first one. Do the very best you can, without notes, without a Bible, without referring to your past studies or other studies on the question of authority. And then bring that to class, and you should have your first quiz with you here today. And we'll be referencing that as we go through the outline, and you can make notes, you can put supporting passages or references to the lesson, so that in the future, if you face these very questions, or maybe I should say when you face these very questions, you'll have a source material that you can maybe use in serving our Master. Okay, this first lesson on what is authority. That may seem so simple, and yet we'll see in the course of our study that sometimes our speech reflects that maybe we really do not have clear concepts of what authority is. And so we want to, in this lesson, define what authority is, the two main facets of it, and the nature or the difference in inherent and delegated authority. And so that's what we'll do in the course of our study today. First of all, you see on your outline that the word authority basically means right, liberty, or freedom. The word they used in the New Testament, that's the basic meaning. But then it takes two directions from that. One is the right to rule or govern, and then the other is the right to act. And on your outline, you see A, right to rule or govern, and then later on your outline, B, you'll see the right to act. So that's the two directions this word takes. You do not need a lexicon to see that. We'll see that in the verses we use. That is the way the word is used. All right, so let's begin our study in Matthew chapter 8 and verse 9. Matthew chapter 8 and verse 9. Okay, in Matthew chapter 8 and in verse 9, Jesus is in conversation with a centurion. You see back up in verse 5, a centurion was a Roman military commander who had men under him, and he has come to Jesus, verse 5, asking him to heal his servant who is paralyzed. And so Jesus said, verse 7, I'll come and heal him. But the centurion said, Lord, I'm not worthy for you to come under my roof, but just say the word, and my servant will be healed. For. Now the reason he made that statement is explained in verse 9. The word for tells you that. For I also am a man under authority. So what he's demonstrating is the faith, the trust that Jesus has the right to command even disease, that he has control over it. We're going to see a little later that the word authority and power can be distinguished, but sometimes they can be inclusive. And here you see it's not only the right to do it, but he believes he has the power to do it. And so you see here, he says, I'm a man under authority with soldiers under me, and I say to this one, go, and he goes. So what does he mean when he says, I have soldiers under me? That is under, excuse me, under my authority. That is, I can command them. I can tell them to go. That's clearly what he means by the term in this passage, the right to rule. So we start with that basic definition that's clear in the context, and we go to the very highest right to rule, that's sovereign authority. And you see we have the word sovereign defined in the text. Above or superior to all others, chief or greatest or supreme. You cannot get any higher in right to rule than God. But the question is, why does God have the right to rule? There is two kinds of authority to rule. One is inherent and the other is delegated. And we'll see that in your lesson. In fact, you see under point A, number 2, we have delegated. So there's inherent right to rule and there's delegated right to rule. Only God has the inherent right to rule others, to rule other men. Inherent simply means nobody gave it to him. It's his by virtue of the fact that he is the creator or the author. It's interesting to take the word author and add the I-T-Y on the end and you have authority. Because he's the author, he does have authority. But we don't need to depend on that little word similarity. We can actually turn to a passage that demonstrates what we're talking about, and that's Romans chapter 1. So anyway, your question 1B on your quiz. Question 1B. It's answered right here. Authority means the right to rule. We see that here in Matthew 8, 9. But there's another correct answer, but we hadn't got there yet. Remember we said there may be more than one correct answer on the quiz. But that's one of them. Okay, now look at Romans chapter 1, verse 18. And this will answer question 2. Let's look at Romans chapter 1, 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. Ungodliness has to do with a failure to respect God as God, and unrighteousness has to do with the corresponding conduct that grows out of that. Here is why God is angry with men. Failure to respect him as God and failure to live in accordance with his will. Note he said, men who suppress the truth. Well, what is the truth in the context? Go to verse 25. Look at verse 25, it tells you what the truth is in the context. It says, they exchange the truth of God. When you have the little word of, it can mean about. It doesn't always mean that, but it can. The truth about God, and that's what he means here. The truth about God. What is the truth about God? Well, he says they exchange that for the lie. If we can find out what the lie is, we can know what the truth is. And the lie is, verse 25, you worship and serve the creature. That's the lie. So what's the truth? You ought to worship and serve the Creator. So that's where it all begins. That's the truth about God. You'll hear people in the world, why are we here? Well, just to enjoy life, get all out of it we can, go from birth to death or whatever it may be. Here is the reason we are here, to worship and serve our Creator. Now, when men fail to give Him that honor, that's ungodliness, and then their lives correspondingly do not comply with His ordinances, and you can see that down in verse 32, though they know the ordinance of God, they live in disobedience to it. And so he said, back up in verse 20, since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes, His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen. And so verse 21, though they knew God, they did not honor Him as God. What do you do when you honor Him as God? Verse 25 tells you. You worship and serve Him. You comply with His ordinances. And so, verse 21, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks. And so, when you started the book of Genesis, when was the book of Genesis written?
1500.
About 1500 B.C., somewhere in that neighborhood. Who was it written for?
The
Jewish nation, Israel. When it was written, Moses wrote it. When it was written, what had been their history for the past 200 to 400 years?
Idolatry.
They had been surrounded by idolatry. We never rise higher than the God we serve. So if your God tolerates murder, lying, cheating, adultery, divorce, stealing, whatever it may be, that's okay. So now Moses has the challenge to take a people who've been immersed in idolatry and get them to obey the will of the one true God. So where does he begin in Genesis 1:1? In the beginning, what? God created. He begins with the concept of Creator. This is the fundamental concept that Moses used to get these people on the right track. Here we are, 1,500 years later. Paul is going to write a letter about some good news about a suffering Messiah who provided salvation by grace through faith. But before he develops that, although he introduced it in verse 16, he explains the need for it. And so he backs up in verse 18. Said, here's why we need it. God is angry with man. Why? And so where does he begin? Same place Moses did. God as the Creator. This is fundamental. When we talk about authority, it's not just something we talk about in church, and it's just not a church topic. It's not a denominational topic. It's fundamental to our very being, how our lives are to be led, and where we're going to spend eternity. God is the sovereign Creator and has the right to tell us how to live. That's where it all begins. And because He's given us everything pertaining to our lives upon this earth, He sustains us, He protects us, we are His. He is deserving of our worship and our service. Paul develops this gospel theme in the first 8 chapters, then deals with how God dealt with the Jewish nation, and then it reaches a climax in chapter 11. Look at chapter 11, verse 36. So he starts out with this sovereign Creator in chapter 1, and look at the end of this marvelous section, 1 through 11, how he wraps this section up before he gets into the practical living that's demanded in 12:1. Therefore, but at the end of chapter 11, from Him and through Him and to Him are all things. To Him be the glory forever. Why live like chapters 12 through 16? There's the answer. That's why. The Bible is just ink on paper if we don't understand that it comes from the hand of Almighty God. Church is just a ceremonial thing with people. if they do not understand what we're trying to do is serve the sovereign Creator. If we're going to teach our children and our grandchildren anything, here's where we need to begin. No wonder Satan is smart enough to try to teach our children and grandchildren the theory of evolution, to take God out of the picture. If he can take God out of the picture, folks, he's won the battle. So God is the sovereign authority. People don't like to be told what to do. Here's why God has the right to tell us what to do. He's our Creator. All right, the other kind of rule is delegated right to rule. The word delegated comes from two words, to send from, with a mission. And every other kind of authority among men is delegated authority. By the way, we've answered question two. What are the three correct answers on question two? A, B, C. He's the Creator. He's the author of the universe. He has infinite wisdom and power. Why should we put D on there?
They've been taught wrong.
People have been taught wrong. People, if we don't teach our children, they may grow up with this concept. Well, why are you a Christian? Or why do you serve God or go to church? Well, that's what I was taught in my family. Is that it? Because mom and daddy said so? No. As children, that's fine. But when we get to be responsible, we need to understand why we make these choices. And that's A, B, and C. All right. Now, delegated authority. Question three on your quiz. What answer or answers? B. The right to rule entrusted to one by a higher authority. That's the correct answer. One correct choice. All right, so that's what we're looking at here. Look at Matthew 28. Jesus has died. He's risen again. He's with his apostles to commission them to preach the gospel to the world. We call it the Great Commission. He said, all authority, what? Has been given to me. That's delegated authority. You say, I thought he was God. He is God. He always had the right to rule as God. Here he's talking about the right to rule relative to man's salvation and how men are saved, who will be saved. All authority has been given to him. Paul talks about that in Ephesians 1. When he was raised from the dead, he was set above all rule and dominion and power. There is no power on the earth, under the earth, in the heavens that can take away your salvation if you serve this King of Kings and Lord of Lords, because all authority has been given to him relative to who's going to spend an eternity with God in heaven. And so then he commissions these men, go therefore. What do you find him doing in the first word of the next verse then? All authority has been given to me, so what do you find him doing?
Giving instructions.
Command, the right to rule. See? Go, what's that next word? Therefore. And tell men that if they're going to be saved, it's going to have to be in the name of Christ. And then in verse 20, teach them to observe all that I commanded you. So you clearly see that authority here has to do with Christ's right to rule. We'll skip Ephesians 1:21 for now. It's a verse you can read. Spiritual beings have authority, but they're under the dominion of Jesus Christ. And then there's authority among men. Men have a right to rule. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 3. It would do us very well if men understood that their authority is not inherent. It's not because you're inherently wise. It's not because you're inherently powerful. It's not because you're inherently rich. If you're a man in the family, it's not simply because you control the purse strings or that you're physically stronger. It's none of that. And if you're an elder in a church, 1 Peter 5, he's talking to elders. And look at verse 3. He says, nor yet as lording it over. That's a phrase that was used not to indicate that they had no authority, but not to use their authority for personal gain. Those allotted to your charge, the New American Standard Version says. The New King James Version says, those entrusted to you. Now, what is delegated authority? You're entrusted with the right to rule over others. That's what elders are. They have been entrusted with the right to rule by the chief shepherd. And you'll see right here in this verse, in verse 4, and this is our next point on the outline, he said, when the chief shepherd appears, you'll receive the unfading crown of glory. That presupposes what? If you receive the crown of glory. What?
You received it by the authority of Jesus.
But which of, that's right. Which elders are going to receive it? All elders? All shepherds?
Those who fulfill what God has said.
Right. Those who fulfill their delegated mission. That's right. He talked to them about they've been entrusted with this authority and how it's to be exercised. You'll receive the unfading crown of glory, if you have been true to that which you have been entrusted. That's the idea of delegated. So elders are not free to say, we're the bosses, we've been made elders, we'll just rule however we think. But no, sir. They better find out what the chief shepherd wants when they shepherd the flock. And that's our two points here, that you're responsible for how it's exercised. Look at 1 Peter 2, so here these people live under the Roman government. Was it a quote-unquote Christian government? No. Pagan government. Do you think everybody always made the right decisions and did the right things? Do you think there was any corruption in the government? Well, you know there was. And yet they're told here in verse 13, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to the king as one in authority or to governors. Now here you are, you live in the Roman government. You've got emperors, like these corrupt emperors they had. You've got governors throughout the provinces. And a lot of these people lived in various provinces, as you see in chapter 1. You mean I'm to recognize their right to rule me? Yes. What is the key in verse 14? Why should I recognize their right to rule me? What does it say in verse 14? As sent by him. Delegated authority. You remember in Romans 13 when Paul was writing to the Romans about submitting to the authorities that exist? What did he say? What reason did he give that they ought to recognize the authorities that existed? What reason did he give in Romans 13? Turn over there and look if you don't remember. What did he say in verse 1? For what reason?
There is no authority
but God. That's right. God delegated that authority. That's why. He said down in verse 4, he is a minister of God. Hard to think of civil rulers as ministers of God, isn't it? That's what he said. And so It's the concept of delegated authority. Okay. So we'll give an account whether it's husbands, parents, elders, employers, supervisors. It doesn't make any difference. If God has delegated authority to men, we are responsible for how we exercise that in accordance with the will of the one who gave that authority. So you've got two kinds of authority. You've got inherent and delegated authority when we talk about the right to rule or to govern. But the word authority has another definition. Under question one on your quiz, what's the other correct answer? Right to act. Look at Matthew 21:23. And what you can do on your quiz is write these verses or that point in the lesson if you keep your outline, so that later, if you're discussing this or you're preparing a class lesson or whatever, you'll have the references to see the place you can go to support that idea. In Matthew chapter 21, when he entered the temple, verse 23, the chief priests and the elders of the people came to him while he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things?" What's another way to phrase their question? Who gave you the right? Who gave you the right to do this? Clearly, that's the word authority here. It's not the right to rule this time. It's still the basic idea of right, but this time it's the right to do something. Who gave you the liberty or the freedom to do this here in the temple? To be teaching here. All right, so when you use authority this way, right to do something, when we're talking about divine authority, what we're talking about is the divine will. What God has given us the right to believe or to teach or to practice. All right, so God-given right to do something. So you'll note point number two here on your outline, B2. And on your sheet, we have a question on your quiz, question four. What's the correct answer or answers? B? Are there any other correct answers?
A.
You believe A? If you believe A, stand up. Do not sit on these pews, because they are not specifically mentioned that the church can buy pews in the Bible. And we need to turn off the heat, because there is no specific statement authorizing the church to have a central heater. Are you sure it's A? We'll be talking about that as we go through. That's the reason for the quiz. To challenge our thinking. Personally, I do not believe A is a correct answer. But you'll have the opportunity to see if I'm right or not as we go through this. Okay? Now, while he'll be teaching Wednesday night, I'll be out of town. So if it's a hard question and difficult, save it for Wednesday and bring it up with Wally. Okay? All right. So, we sometimes say, look, as a boy growing up, I heard this kind of thing. What about the water cooler? And I would hear good brethren say, well, we don't have any authority for a water cooler or church building. What are we saying when we say that if we understand the meaning of the word authority? Replace the word authority with another word.
We have no right.
No right. That's what we're saying. What do we mean by authority? When I say I have no right to have the water cooler, the central heat, the pews paid for by church funds, I'm saying I don't have the right to do it. If I say that, and then I began to argue in a biblical way with a brother who, where they go to church, they've got a playground and a kitchen. And you say, you don't have any authority to have that. What will they ask me? Yeah, where's the authority for pews and a water cooler and all of that? You've already admitted you do some things you don't have authority for. What are you fussing with me about? So we're inconsistent if that's the case. So there's practical application to this. Yes, Sally?
I have a question. Okay, I circled A because your question is, to have no authority to do something. I don't think that we do things that we have some kind of authority to do, whether it's specific or generic or however you want to put it.
What does A say? Does it say specific or generic?
It says specifically.
Specifically.
To have no authority to do something means that we don't have any right to do it.
No. Read A. That's not what A says.
I read A.
A says we have no command, statement, or example. What?
Specifically.
Specifically mentioning and authorizing the practice.
But if we don't have any authority to do it.
I didn't ask. That's not question A.
That's what the question is, to have no authority of any kind.
We have no command, we have no authority to do, to have no authority to do something means we have no command, statement, or example, what? Specifically mentioning.
But we do things that we don't have specific authority, but we have generic authority to do.
I agree with that, but that's not the question. This is critical, I'm telling you, in our understanding and in talking with others.
It's a trick question.
No, it isn't. It's a very practical question. It may sound tricky, but it's a real practical question. Now, it's going to be well down in the study before we deal with generic and specific authority. But I hope you can see at the very beginning why this. You say, why do we need to study authority? Here's one of the reasons, right here. Yes, David?
Well, you said specific example. Some people can say, well, we need to meet in the upper room, too.
Well, that's another question I have on here. And so, do we have to follow every specific example? Some brother said, we've got to follow examples. Well, I don't. You don't either. We're not in an upper room this morning. Yes, sir.
I don't know if this will help Sally's seeing this, but start with A. Just read it back. We have no command, statement, or example specifically mentioning authorizing the practice. It is therefore unauthorized, and we therefore have no authority to do something. I mean, if you follow that logic, then the something is, we don't have authority for building. We don't have authority for water cooler. We don't have authority for carrying on. So read it back. Maybe reading it backwards will help. I don't know if it will or not. It may just confuse it.
Well, I assure you, you're going to be in trouble trying to argue the question of authority if you believe you don't have the authority to do something unless it's specifically mentioned. So good. Glad you asked that, Sally. Good question. We'll look at it as we continue to go through. All right. Number 3 on the outline. Silence does not give consent. Look at question 6 on your quiz. What's the correct answer or answers? When Jesus instructed the apostles to teach those they baptized to observe all that I commanded you, he meant they were to be taught. Now don't get gun shy. We're not trying to embarrass anybody. This is the challenge practically. What would be the correct answer or answers? A.
I'm with B.
B.
B is true.
C. Is D true? No, it's not. A, B, and C. When Jesus instructed the apostles, teach those who baptized to observe all that I commanded you, it meant they were to be taught to do what was commanded, to neither add to, subtract from, or change what was commanded, to refrain from what was not authorized. Does that say that in Matthew 28:20?
Yes.
It does? Those words are there?
No, not those words, but that's what it says.
That's what it means. There's a difference. It doesn't say that, but that's what it means. How do we know that's what it means? Well, that's why the outline. So you've got two alternatives. Look, this is as practical as you can get on the question of authority. If you talk to a denominational preacher, for example, and I can show you articles like this, they believe they respect the authority of Jesus. Can they find instrumental music in the New Testament? No. But why do they say it's okay?
It's a pattern in the Old Testament.
Sir?
They'll say it's a pattern in the Old Testament.
That's one thing. Somebody said what? It's not specifically forbidden. You say, but what about Matthew 28:20? You're supposed to observe everything that I commanded you. Would that preacher say we do that? Yes, he would. So here's your alternatives on your lesson. What Jesus meant was, only what is either specifically or generically authorized in the Scripture should be received as a matter of faith and practice. Alternative two, what is not specifically forbidden, as long as not violating what is clearly revealed, may also be incorporated into the religion of Jesus Christ. That's why you have instrumental music, and that's why you have playgrounds, and that's why you have kitchens, and that's why you have a lot of things in religion today. This is fundamental right here. So how do we interpret it? Well, we could say the Restoration Movement interpret hogwash. We're not following the Restoration Movement. Well, preachers say, I read in some prestigious religious papers, that meant a thing. Let's see if we can find some way to help us with the interpretation. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 2. Look at the end of verse 2 first. Keep your Bible open to Matthew 28:20. We're doing a comparison. Matthew 28:20 says, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. Deuteronomy 4:2, the end of the verse. Keep the commandments of the Lord your God which I command you. That's almost identical, isn't it? Not exactly, but it's pretty close. But now note the first part of verse 2. You shall not add to the word which I am commanding you, nor take away from it that. This is how you keep his commandments. You don't add or take away. That's how you do it. So here's the Sabbath day. Keep it holy. Well, it will do Thursday also. No? No. Got these three annual feast days. We'll add a couple more. No? You don't add. You don't take away. That's the way you keep the commandments. Now, this was written a long, long time before Jesus lived. Why would we turn over to Deuteronomy to interpret Jesus' statement? What kind of a religious person was Jesus when he walked on the earth?
He was a Jew.
What?
A Jew.
A Jew. Hebrew. What kind of people was he talking to?
Hebrews.
Jews. Hebrews. So it's a Jew talking to Jews. A Hebrew, if you please, talking to Hebrews. This is the law they studied. Would we not interpret this not according to the 21st century language, but according to their language, what it would mean to them when he said, Matthew 28:20, teach them to observe all that I commanded you. All right, look at Deuteronomy 5:32. So Jesus is the commander, if you please, of the new covenant, who was the mediator of the old covenant. Moses, right? Moses. And Moses wrote Deuteronomy. All right, here we have Deuteronomy 5:32. Now look, first of all, at verse Well, let's start 32. You shall observe to do just as the Lord your God has commanded you. Is that similar to Matthew 28:20?
Yes.
Very similar language, is it not? But now read the rest of the verse. You shall not turn aside to the right or to the left. You shall walk in all the way which the Lord your God has commanded you. You have two statements, the beginning of 32, the beginning of 33. They sandwich that middle statement. You shall not turn aside to the right or to the left. Does that not define biblically what it means to keep the commandment? And then chapter 29 of Deuteronomy. Moses made some pronouncements about their future that no doubt stirred their curiosity. They did not understand or know about. Oftentimes we read the Bible and we've got a lot of what ifs. Questions we have no answers for. We just got through with the study of marriage and divorce and remarriage. A lot of unanswered questions, didn't we? But in Deuteronomy 29:29, he said, the secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and our sons forever, that we may observe all the words of this law. What we need to deal with is what's revealed, and understanding that and following that. So silence does not give consent. We have 2 Timothy 1:13. The Old Testament, we'll be studying this in a later lesson, is often called a pattern. People will agree. But what about the New Covenant? 2 Timothy 1:13. Retain, this version says, the standard. The New King James and American Standard Version says the pattern. The King James says the form. I've got the word here for you. Pattern is a model or guide or plan to be strictly followed. Webster's Dictionary. And by the way, those acronyms I gave you in that first set of papers that I handed out, what those mean. And so by definition, it does not allow deviation or additions. You've got a pattern to build a house. That's a nice house. You're the contractor. I think I'm going to add a bedroom. Or do you have the authority to do that? Does the fellow who you're building it for have to tell you, don't add a bedroom? No, he didn't have to tell you that. Here's the pattern. You follow the pattern. Make an address, whatever it may be. He says you follow the pattern of sound words. We're going to study God's word as an authoritative pattern in a later lesson. We're out of time. Wally will pick up here with Hebrews 7, which answers question 5. And so he'll pick up there, and hopefully we can finish lesson 1 in the next class and get started on lesson 2. So do the quiz. Do the quiz sometime this week for the second lesson. Okay, thank you so much for your good comments and questions this morning.